Hello, Space Junkies, and welcome to episode 140 of What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Scott Bottman, and joining me for a fairly short, quick, almost snippet episode of the podcast is my original Wookiee co-pilot, our very own Dave Filoni, the Gooey Chewy, Mr. Miracle, man of a thousand nicknames, Nathan Miracle. How's it going, Nathan?
Sorry, translator there. It's going pretty well. It is a good Friday in more ways than one.
Yeah. We are recording this on March the 29th of 2024 at a ripe old 1 o'clock in the afternoon because Nathan's got the day off and I'm taking my lunch break to record the podcast. So don't you listeners think that I'm not dedicated to this show. Also, don't you listeners think that I'm not dedicated to cool Star Wars merch? Because look, I have an awesome Darth Malgus figure on the desk here next to my paint rack now as I'm getting acclimated to the din of geekery here at the domicile. I actually ordered that Darth Malgus last year for Star Wars Day, but because of the way Hasbro production of specialized stuff works, I didn't receive the figure. I ordered it May 4th, didn't receive it until October of 23, and then finally opened the box last night to put him on display. Because when he arrived in October of last year, I was like, I could open this, but then I'm just going to have to pack it back up again whenever it's time for me to move into the domicile next year. So I'm leaving Darth Malgus in the box. It was an interesting experience to, you know, exercise enough self-control not to grab the nearest lightsaber and slice open the box. But also, he was in this new Hasbro Star Wars figure, and I assume Marvel figures and so on as well, plan of packaging that uses zero plastic. Not just no plastic bubble, but when I opened the cardboard, he was wrapped in wax paper, and his cloth goods were, you know, tied around him, and his lightsaber was in a little wax envelope taped shut like you would get silverware at a cafeteria or something like that, you know, the little wax envelope. It was wild.
Look at that. Darth Malgus, such a good guy. He cares about the environment.
Yes, good guy Darth Malgus. I'm sure you could make that meme. You'll have no shortage of... No, you can't. He's the worst. But it did inspire me to want to go fire up Star Wars The Old Republic MMORPG and go kill Darth Malgus again just for, you know, completionist's sake. Although, depending on who you ask about that story, which this podcast episode is not about TOR, but it could be, depending on who you ask about that story, Darth Malgus is still alive.
Oh, see? What a great guy. Immortality and everything. I don't know how that makes you great, not good.
Yeah. But speaking of people in Star Wars that we thought were dead, but oh gosh, they're actually still alive. This episode of The Bad Batch, we get to see the return of Asajj Ventress. And all of our questions about how is she still alive are clearly answered. Wait, no, I'm sorry.
Let me
check my notes over here on the other screen. Oh, I'm sorry. None of our questions about how is she still alive are answered in this episode. So anyway, yeah.
But, Nathan, but she is a harbinger.
She is a harbinger.
Not precisely an icy harbinger of anyone's doom.
I don't know. Some of her reactions were kind of icy.
That's true. Yeah, for our 90s DC movie fans there.
Oh, man.
Lots of crossover with Star Wars, I think.
Yeah. Anywho, let's go ahead and jump right into discussion of the main topic of today's episode of the podcast, and that is episode number 9 of season 3 of The Bad Batch, and that's The Harbinger. And yes, it is the much heralded, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening, we saw it in the trailer for the season, return of Asajj Ventress. So Nathan, what did you like best about this episode?
My favorite moment in this episode came at the very end when Omega asks about her M count. And Asajj tells her, no, you don't have a very high M count. But the way she says it and the way she interacts with the rest of the Bad Batch afterwards makes me think that maybe she does, and Asajj was lying to protect her. And I love the fact that that's left kind of up in the air, open to interpretation. We may find out later that Asajj was lying. We may find out that she was telling the truth. It may remain a mystery for the rest of time. Who knows? And I like that aspect of it, that she could be lying, but we don't know.
Yeah, that was a really good point in the episode. I personally think that she is lying because she doesn't want the Bad Batch to know for sure, and then the Bad Batch will do something like go seek out a Jedi to help train Omega or whatever, because ask Din Djarin, sometimes that doesn't work out so well for you. This is, of course, before Grogu's story happened, so the Bad Batch definitely wouldn't know that that would be a bad idea, but Asajj probably knows it would be a bad idea, because she tries to impress upon the boys all episode long, sometimes verbally, often physically, the Empire is bad. Like, no, it's much worse than you think. No, even worse than that. So she almost feels as though that Omega is naive. Crosshair calls Omega naive in the episode, but then Asajj seems to think that the clones themselves are naive, and she probably has a good point about that. I mean, as clone soldiers, they had a very limited lifestyle. You know, they've been through the horrors of war, of course, but dealing with interpersonal relationships and espionage and the world of political machinations that the Empire sprang from, man, these guys, they don't know anything about that. And I think Asajj rightly knows from her own personal experience and the fact that she's, you know, got a connection to the dark side, that they could probably very easily be taken advantage of by, if not running into trouble because they're seeking out a Jedi during the age of the Empire, finding a fake Jedi who is just a Imperial agent, or even worse, a Sith masquerading as a Jedi. Like, it might not even be a con man or a double agent. It might be an actual Darksider who's trying to, you know, get his own group of dark disciples.
Ooh.
Anyway, nice. Thank you. My favorite part of this episode was going to be a little more lighter in tone than what you were talking about. I loved seeing Omega ride Batcher as though he were or she were a mount. So cute. And it emphasized the idea that, oh, wait a minute, Omega definitely has a high M count, because Asajj literally says a strong connection to nature makes for good evidence that you have a high M count. She didn't quite say a strong connection to nature makes evidence that you are a light side force user by nature, but she almost did. And we, as viewers, know that from Master Yoda, Ezra, Rey. All of them have interacted with animals in a positive way, interacted with nature in a positive way. And Omega's got this bond with Batcher. Just like, Batcher seems to know what she wants her to do, and she goes ahead and does it. Like, she gives commands and whistles every so often, but, I mean, she's not, like, doing animal husbandry with Batcher. Plus, that kind of a hound isn't super easy to train, as we saw on Mount Tantus. But Omega and the animal are just, like, simpatico, right? And I think that was supposed to be hitting us over the head as the viewer with, actually, Omega does have a high M count, and she's got that light side power of communing with nature in a very good way. And so, to prove that to you, here she is jumping on this bloodthirsty beast and using it as basically a docile, wonderful mount. Plus, she's a little girl who now has her own pony, essentially. Who won't be happy about that?
Yeah, that was pretty good. And, you know, it actually ties into what Asajj does later in the episode. You talked about how usually it's the light side force users who have this connection to nature. And Asajj has turned away from the dark path, but she's not completely light side either. So when she communes with nature, she did you summon that giant monster thing? Not on purpose. So that's a yes. That is an absolute yes. Just not on purpose.
Asajj is like, I'm on my path of redemption. I'm trying to be a gray Jedi. Good news, fanboys. Me and the Bindu are going to be like this, except we have to be more like this because he's in the middle. Anyway, but I don't have it under control, total mastery yet. So, yes, I got the cool glowy fish to come and make a nice, beautiful display for us. And, oops, I also released the Kraken.
Yeah, a long time ago, there was a web comic that presented Star Wars, but as though it were a D&D campaign, and it just put speech bubbles above each of the characters that of what their players would be saying. And the player who was playing Qui-Gon Jinn thought that he had a spell, Summon Bigger Fish, because this happened.
There's always a bigger fish.
And as soon as that fish showed up, I'm like, oh man, she just cast Summon Bigger Fish.
Yep. I looked at Mita and said, there's always a bigger fish. There was a missed opportunity here, though. I really wanted it to happen. I was like, oh, we're going to get another episode where this happens because Wrecker is watching the proceedings through the macro binoculars. And I really wanted him to say, why is there always some giant monster?
Yeah, I had that thought, too. It's like, we are constantly fighting giant monsters on this show. Forget the Empire. The enemy is Giant Monster of the Week.
Yes, the Bad Batch's real nemesis, Kaiju. Anyway. But yes, that was my favorite part. So, number two question here. What was your least favorite part? I'm going to address the elephant in the room, speaking of giant monsters, and say, somehow, Asajj returned.
Yep.
And that's it. Which she's just hanging. So first of all, she easily finds Pabu, which, you know, has been touted as this, nobody can find us, we're safe here. She not only gets there, she gets there, parks her ship way underground, and like no one has even noticed. And there was no prelude, no buildup of her amazing stealth skills. Maybe you can talk about some Clone Wars evidence of her having stealth. I mean, I know she was a shadowy assassin, so she's got that in her toolbox, but it was just a little too much of a surprise. Asajj Ventress is here. And then also, the Bad Batch doesn't know who she is? I thought she would have been subject to a kill-on-sight order for the clone army. I'm glad that they took a moment later in the episode for Crosshair to be all name check tech and say, I checked tech's database and look who this person is. And it's the classic example, though, of quick, Superman, put on your glasses. No one will recognize you. Quick, Asajj, cut your hair differently and no one will recognize you.
Or just have hair.
Yes, right. Yeah. I do like the new cut on her, though. She looked great. It was almost comical of, and Asajj Ventress is here, to teach you lessons about the Force without very much ever hardly saying the word the Force. And then Omega was all, ooh, are you saying I might be a Jedi? I mean, my friend might be a Jedi? And, like, I wasn't aware that Omega had a whole lot of knowledge and or interaction with Jedi up until this point. I mean, clearly she could read about it.
Yeah, and I would assume that she knows who they are because the Jedi, you know, commissioned the clone army. So it's not like they're unknown elements on Kamino. And sometimes in the Clone Wars, the Jedi were on Kamino. There was one in particular who oversaw the training, and they even hired a couple of bounty hunters to assist with the training of the clones. So it makes sense to me that she would know who the Jedi are, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me that that she would aspire to be a Jedi, that she might be a Jedi.
And continuing on from my major point of what did you like least, it's a surprise, Asajj Ventress, and here's no context, was also, it just doesn't make sense that Clone Force 99 wouldn't know who Asajj was. She feels like if the clone army had that deck of poker cards that...
Yep.
If the clone army had a deck of poker cards that the United States Army had in the War on Terror that had faces of important people that you should capture or kill, Asajj would be like Queen of Spades in that deck, right up next to Ace of Spades, Count Dooku, and so on and so forth. Of course, Palpatine wouldn't be in the deck because that was the whole problem with the clone army, but anyway. If you had that deck of Most Wanted, I feel like Asajj would be right in there on the high suit cards.
She would have to be, because remember, the Jedi didn't know about Palpatine. They knew that the Sith always come in pairs. So once Darth Maul was killed, they assume, okay, there's still a Sith out there. They find out that Count Dooku is a Sith. They think, okay, he's the master because he had been a Jedi master. Throughout the Clone Wars, they don't know about Palpatine. So you have to figure they're assuming Dooku is the Sith master. And who's his apprentice? It's Asajj Ventress. Mm-hmm. So they have to be thinking that she is the Sith apprentice. How is that not the second highest, most valuable target in the galaxy that you would want everyone in your clone army, especially people who go do missions that other clones can't handle? They should absolutely know who Asajj is. So unsurprisingly, Asajj is kind of coming in as my least favorite thing here too. In addition to not having an explanation for why she's there, she doesn't do much. She tests Omega, and then that's kind of it. Like, there was no real story arc for her. Frankly, she could have been some random Jedi who had escaped the Purge, and the story wouldn't really have changed much. In some ways, it might be better because it would explain why the Bad Batch didn't know who that person was offhand.
Yeah. I feel like I might be able to give the Clone Force 99 a little bit of a pass on not knowing her, because famously they're really bad at following orders. They're not that good at being clone troopers.
That's true.
Though that could extend
good
to
at taking out targets.
They are, but it could extend to taking the time to pay close attention to mission briefings. You know,
I think, I suppose.
Early on in season one, we often saw how Wrecker doesn't pay that much attention to mission briefings when they were all still hanging out in the barracks, you know, and he was just like, oh, time to go blow up some more clankers. You know,
I give Wrecker a pass.
The rest of them.
The rest of them.
Come on, guys. No, I mean, you know what? Tech probably would have recognized her on sight.
Yeah.
He would have been all like, did, what the? It's Asajj Ventress, everyone.
You know, if Tech were still here, I feel like the story would have gone very similarly, but at some point Tech would have informed the others that this was Asajj Ventress, and they'd be like, what? Why didn't you tell us? I thought it was obvious.
I thought you knew. Yeah, exactly. Good times. Okay. All right. Well, we've hit on quite a few connections to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy but let's go for question three officially. What connections did you draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy?
So Asajj Ventress is there.
Indeed.
That's the big connection. And I already mentioned the summon bigger fish. There's always a bigger fish connection. And we enjoyed the connection to the Force users often connect to nature and how that played in. And honestly, that was about it. That's all I had for this one.
Yeah, so I did note that Asajj seems to still have her traditional lightsaber hilt. She's just got the yellow blade now. I think she had that curved hilt before.
She did have a pair of curved hilt sabers. This is a good point. I should have thought about this. That is a different saber than she had in the Clone Wars because Barriss Offee took her sabers in the end of season 5. So from there on out, she didn't have her original red lightsabers. So she has somehow obtained a new saber with a yellow crystal.
I feel like it's high probability that she built it because, if you're trained by Count Dooku, you're going to want that curved hilt because that's how he would taught you to fight. Yeah, not many other people have curved hilt. So she probably had to either custom make one or maybe she knows or knew where he kept some backup ones in his vault and she went and stole it. Before the Empire came and got the stuff out of Dooku's castle.
That seems likely. It's also possible that she met a Jedi temple guard at some point because they're usually the ones who have the yellow lightsabers somehow obtained a crystal from them, possibly by killing them. I wouldn't put it past Asajj to do that.
I mean, she was close to killing off Hunter and friends. Despite what Wrecker said, oh, we would just get warmed up. I think she was going to kill him. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, but my other big connection is Asajj seems to be giving off the heavy vibes of independent operator who's on the fringes of society that may or may not actually be good, definitely anti-hero kind of thing. So she was really rocking a bounty hunter vibe, but almost like your Dash Rendar or, and here's a blast from the past, which is my big connection, Ketsu Onyo from Star Wars Rebels, one of Sabine Wren's friends that helped Sabine escape from the Imperial Academy on Mandalore. And then they became friends. And then Ketsu went off and joined Black Sun. And we saw her in Rebels with her named starship, her personal starship, the Shadowcaster, which I thought was cool because it looked vaguely like a electric guitar when seen from above. So like Stratocaster, Shadowcaster. Anyway, that was a stretch, but I like it. She was not a huge character in Rebels, but big enough that she appeared more than once. And then I believe, if I remember correctly, She was part of the group that did show up to help them in one of the Rebels finales, not the big end of show finale, but like one of the season finales. You know how Dave loves to, well, of course, you know how Dave
yes, absolutely,
loves to do the let's Everybody gather up comes together. The dream team. Yeah. Ketsu came back and helped do some stuff in Rebels, at least for a little while. And then they tried to get and then of course Hera tried to get her to join the rebellion and join Ghost Squadron. But she didn't really want to do that. She just kind of says, I got to do my own thing. Which is essentially the way I felt about Ventress at the end of The Harbinger. She doesn't, she's definitely not going to go work for the Empire, but she also isn't really keen on hanging around and doing stuff on Pabu with the Bad Batch. But she sort of is like, I'll be around, you know? So I think we'll see her again, but primarily because I feel like the footage we saw of Asajj in the trailer wasn't in this episode. Unless I need to go back and look at it real quick.
Even if it is, I expect that we'll see her again in this season. As you mentioned, Dave loves to, you know, bring the whole band back together towards the end. So it would not surprise me if both she and Finnick showed up later in the season.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I'm looking at Ketsu Onyo's entry in Wikipedia, and eventually she does decide to join the rebellion, but it happened in an episode of Forces of Destiny. After officially leaving Black Sun, Ketsu went with Sabine to Garel City. There, they planned to steal several food containers and supplies for the rebellion. Ketsu and Sabine were then able to knock out several stormtroopers with their helmets. They were confronted by several blaster-wielding stormtroopers. Ketsu then rescued a young Chadra fanboy from a falling food container. She and Sabine met with Hera and the Ghost, and after dropping off the boy, Ketsu decided to join the rebellion. Well, that's cool. I'll have to go watch that episode of Forces of Destiny because I like Ketsu as a character. Nice to know that she does eventually decide to go full-time with the Rebellion.
And I do love Chadra fan. Those are the little bat-like characters.
Little bat guys. Yeah, little bat-like characters. That's
cool. First seen in the cantina, much like the Yamri.
That's right.
Yeah.
Cool. Anywho, so yeah, that's my big connection. Asajj really made me feel like, oh, it's Ketsu Onyo from Star Wars Rebels. I mean, they even had similar haircuts, although Asajj has a little more hair than Ketsu.
Feels weird to say after she was bald right. for so long.
Yeah. I love having Asajj be a part of the Star Wars galaxy again. Like here in 2024, I like that character can have some new adventures. But I desperately hope that there is one episode of The Bad Batch where they explain what happened. And if there's not, I hope that we get something a little more substantial than, say, an episode of Forces of Destiny on StarWars.com that answers the question. Especially since Star Wars Mothership made a big point of having a tweet come out when Asajj was in the trailer where the author of Dark Disciple, the novel in which we thought that Asajj dies, he said, don't worry, the stuff that she's doing is going to be completely in concert with, or won't contradict, Dark Disciple. And we've talked about on several episodes of the podcast how is that even possible in a galaxy where time travel is not a normal thing? And actually, as Dave Filoni explained about the World Between Worlds last year, not a thing at all. You cannot use the World Between Worlds to time hop. Anyway.
Yeah, you can be taken out of time, but you can't go back and change things that have already happened.
Yeah, yeah. Anywho, so yeah, that's my big connection to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy, and I enjoyed it. I thought Asajj's characterization here was cool, but it was a little thin. So moving on to question number four. All right, speaking about Asajj again, because I mean, let's face it, she's the big focal point of this episode. She is the Harbinger from the title. Does Asajj now work closely with Finnick Shand? And therefore, is Asajj Ventress part of the Bounty Hunters Guild? Or is she just like a source or a contact for Finnick and other bounty hunters? What do you think, Nathan?
Well, she did actually become a bounty hunter in the latter parts of the Clone Wars. So mm-hmm. the assumption is that she's still doing that. She's still right. a bounty hunter, and that's how she would know Finnick.
Bounty hunter for life, or in this case, even after you come back to life.
Apparently. But we don't receive any actual explanation on that in the show. So we don't know if she's part of the guild or if she's just freelancing. We don't even find out if she's part of the guild in the Clone Wars, because the guild wasn't created in the real world until The Mandalorian. And then they kind of retconned it as, oh, yes, we have this guild that's been a thing this whole time, but has never actually been directly mentioned, even if characters were retroactively made part of it.
Right.
And because of that, we don't know when the guild actually started. Was the guild a thing at this point in time? Not sure. I want to say probably, because I feel like the Bounty Hunters Guild is a thing that doesn't really care what the political alignments are for the galaxy, Republic, Empire. Who cares? The credits work. So I'm guessing that she probably is part of the guild. That's probably how Finnick was able to contact her, and probably how she found out that the Bad Batch was asking around for the M-Count. In fact, at this point, I think that might have been who Finnick was talking to at the end of the last episode.
Yes. I think that's what we're supposed to surmise based on what Asajj had to say in this episode. I agree with you. I think she is part of the Bounty Hunter Guild, and I think that we are supposed to infer that the guild exists even here in the Bad Batch, because we have all the trappings of it when Fennec Shand is involved, like the pucks with the holograms and the so on and the so forth. There's even almost a quasi-reference to it when we see the Clone X guys, the Shadow Clones, have their list of targets, and they kind of do, like, you know, chain codes and holograms and blah, blah, blah of who's on the list. And even Wrecker was all like, who puts a child on their target list? You know, that kind of thing. And so I think we're supposed to infer that the Bounty Hunter Guild exists. And like you said, retroactively, the Mandalorian seemed to have applied it to all of Star Wars canon, at least going all the way back to the prequel trilogy, where we have Jango Fett and Zam Wessel doing their stuff in episode 2, Attack of the Clones. And I think that, you know, having Asajj join the group or become a bounty hunter in Clone Wars series was also supposed to help solidify that. Yeah, I think she is a bounty hunter, but she probably is way more choosy about what jobs that she takes, which is why she wasn't involved in other bounty hunting quests in the earlier parts of the series, because she, like I said, she knew where Count Dooku's wealth was stored, so she probably is not hurting for money. She's probably got plenty of resources and cash and stuff squirreled away. And apparently, Count Dooku himself was big on being a Star Wars galaxy prepper, because he seems to have had hidden cachets and little side deals all over the place. And I bet she probably has the same thing going. She's probably kind of like Batman, right? She's got all, like, she has a big base. She's got the Ventress Cave, but then she also has some, like, side hustles out there, like a little buried cargo container somewhere on an asteroid base that's filled with extra credits, calamari flan, rations, extra lightsaber crystals, and a couple of weapons to outfit whomever her, you know, crew is at the time that she needs it, and maybe even some coaxium, right? I could totally see Ventress doing that. She probably also has some places where she stored some Sith artifacts, and at this point, some Jedi artifacts, because the way she dressed, her hairstyle, and her attitudes and actions toward the Force in this episode really was giving Grey Jedi kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, she had an arc with Ahsoka towards the end of the Clone Wars that I think really influenced who she is as a character from that point on. So I think you're right. Yeah. She probably does have lots of little stowaway places throughout the galaxy and is probably doing fine taking on high-value bounty targets. But, you know, she's got to be careful. The Empire is not fond of Force users, as she pointed out. So if she goes waving those lightsabers around and using the Force, people will start coming after her.
Yeah. But, I mean, she has personal experience with being betrayed by Sith Master, but then also being betrayed by guy in charge of the government, you know, whatever government that may be.
Yeah. I have to wonder, does she realize that Palpatine was Dooku's master?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Is there ever a Clone Wars episode where Ventress is there when Sidious shows up?
I'm going to have to go back and research that. I don't know that there is. And I know that Palpatine ordered Dooku to get rid of Ventress, which Ventress wasn't there when that happened. So she doesn't directly find out that, oh, you know, my master's master told me to get rid of me. Also, he just says to get rid of her. He doesn't actually say kill her, but that's how Dooku takes it.
So, yeah.
Maybe it's kind of implied there.
Well, speaking of Ventress's implied death, what's question five for this episode of the podcast, Nathan?
Question number five is the big obvious one. How is Asajj alive given the events of Dark Disciple, where she apparently dies?
Yeah, can you, do you have a summary of Dark Disciple death scene pulled up, or should I look for it on Wikipedia here?
I'll give you the very high level overview. Spoiler alert. If you want to
wait, hang on. I actually have the button for that.
There you go. Yep, that's the one.
So yes, spoilers for a novel from 2015.
Yeah. So Quinlan Vos tries to hunt down Ventress, and he ends up working with Ventress, and eventually Ventress kind of turns him away from the Jedi, and they're kind of doing their own thing for a little bit. But then they're confronting Dooku. This is the very abbreviated version of the story. They're confronting Dooku. Dooku tries to kill Quinlan Vos with lightning, and Asajj jumps in the way and takes the lightning for him. And then Quinlan Vos goes back to the Jedi Council and says, you know, she did. very abbreviated version.
Right.
So it certainly seems like she dies in that book. There are a couple of possibilities. Maybe she was only mostly dead. And as we all know, mostly dead is slightly alive. She could have been taken back to the Night Sister planet and been revived there, although the Night Sisters themselves were kind of wiped out. So that would probably involve some more storytelling at some point to make that a viable explanation. But she does kind of hint at the end of this episode that she has several lives. So I think she's just really good at getting out when people think she's dead.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that it's mostly the case of somehow Ventress returned, or we thought she was dead. And Quinlan Vos is like, there's a scene in the novel, if I remember correctly, where Vos reconciles with her as she's like sort of dying. I don't know that it's quite as literal. I haven't read it in a long time. I don't know that it's quite as literal as he's holding Ventress and she's all, with my final breath, I want to tell you that you're great and I think you're the best and the light side rules. But it's something close to holding her onto the back of her head as she shuffles off this mortal coil. And then, of course, he leaves her behind. Goes, like you said, goes back to the Jedi Council and is all, Asajj Ventress is dead, but I want to defend her and say that it's her that brought me back to the light side. Me, Quinlan Vos, brought me back to the light side. And so it's kind of like, you know, similar to complaints that some folks have had about the rise of Skywalker and, you know, if Palpatine's still alive, does it cheapen Anakin's sacrifice? And in this case, it's a little bit different because if Asajj sacrifice is what inspired Quinlan Vos to be all, no, the light side is the way. I need to go back to the light side. If Asajj didn't actually die, was it not as meaningful of a sacrifice? I mean, it still had the desired effect because Quinlan Vos does come back to the light side and goes on to do good Jedi things before he too gets killed.
Or does he?
Or does he? True. I mean, I feel fairly confident that Vos is dead. But then again, I thought Asajj was dead.
In Kenobi finds a marking that Quinlan Vos left on the way. So we don't know if he died or when he would have died.
He was doing stuff to help smuggle Force users away from the Vengeful Empire there during the Kenobi timeframe. But I thought we also saw him frozen in the amber stuff later in that series.
I know it's hard to tell who's in the amber. Yeah, that's really the thing. It's entirely possible that he was one of the ones in the amber. The only one that I know for sure was in the amber was Sunubi, who was an old Kane using Jedi. And when I say Kane using, I mean, he had a lightsaber Kane. You pop that thing off and zzz, silver blade and everything. He's the only one that I know for sure we recognize there.
I think
at least one person who looks like Quinlan Vos, but it's hard to tell.
I think that we're supposed to surmise, going back to Ventress being still alive in The Harbinger, I think we may supposed to surmise that when she says about multiple lives, she knows some Night Sister magic that helps you come back to life. Or, you know, you go to a total fugue state where you're so near to death that it's almost imperceptible, but you're not really dead. Because the Night Sisters in current Star Wars storytelling very much are hinted at control over death and zombieism and that kind of thing, because all the, you know, troopers in Ahsoka and the actual death trooper that in Ahsoka that Sabine and Ezra have to fight, you know, with the evil, creepy zombie jaws under his suit and all.
And let's be honest, this wouldn't be the first time a Dathomir-related character came back from what should clearly have been total death. Yes. Maul comes back after being cut in half. Right. So
he's in literal pieces, but that's okay. He'll be fine. He'll come back.
Maybe this is almost a bit of a retcon for him as to explain how he survived. Dathomiri magic can allow you to survive things that really ought to kill you.
Sith super science, dark side forces, dark side necromancy. I mean, come on. Palpatine's got Dr. Hemlock working on Project Necromancer, for crying out loud. So
I think that kind of changes my biggest complaint here to they didn't explain it rather than it is inexplainable. There are certainly explanations that can happen. Hopefully we'll get one down the line, and hopefully it's better than somehow Asajj returned.
Right.
Which, going to Rise of Skywalker, I would have been fine if Palpatine was the one who said, yes, it was dark magic, secrets that only we the Sith knew, rather than some random guy who shouldn't know how
that happened. Obviously, Beaumont was on the island in Lost, and so he has been able to interact with weird, extraplanar, mystical forces. When you get surrounded by a black smoke monster that is the personification of death, you learn things. Then you get somehow transported to the Star Wars galaxy and change your name to Beaumont and start explaining those things to Oscar Isaac and friends.
But first you have to make a side journey into Middle Earth and figure out
how... I can't think of his name on Lost, but I'm pretty sure Lost happened after the Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, okay. So first he found out about Sauron.
So Mary is trapped on the island. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's it. Clearly Palpatine has the One Ring.
Well, if you want to hear more Lord of the Rings discussion and possibly even Lost, you should check out the other shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network, where people talk about all the crazy fandoms that we have. And here to tell us more is Kevin.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, thanks very much, Kevin. Well, we don't have a whole lot of Star Wars news to discuss here on this episode of the podcast. And plus, you know, we're kind of short because as Nathan pointed out, there wasn't that much character development going on in that episode of The Bad Batch. And Derek is unavailable since it's the holiday weekend. So real quick on the way out, I did see a headline that grabbed my attention earlier this week about Star Wars. And that is, pieces of Disney's closed Star Wars hotel are coming to Disneyland. And this is from the San Francisco Gate publication out there in California. A long time ago, the article begins, in March of 2022, in a galaxy far, far away, Disney opened its most immersive and wildly ambitious project. For $5,000 or more, Star Wars fans could board the Galactic Star Cruiser, a two-night experience in which guests acted out their Jedi, Resistance, and First Order fantasies, following storylines and carrying out missions on a trip through the cosmos. According to the company, it was the best-reviewed experience Disney ever offered. The cost was too high for most fans, however, and it closed after 18 months. So this article is by Julie Tremaine at SF Gate, and she goes on to explain that some of the parts of Galaxy's Edge's in Orlando hotel at the Galactic Star Cruiser are making their way across the country to Disneyland in California, but it wasn't quite as in-depth or expansive of a transfer as I was hoping. So it's not furniture or props per se, Nathan. It's some of the souvenir things. In this case, it's souvenir glassware. So if you were a lucky member of the lucky few that got to go on board the Galactic Star Cruiser, when you ordered cocktails and drinks, you could get them in souvenir glassware that was marked with the Galactic Star Cruiser logo, and it has the Chandrila Starline cruise line logo on there. Sort of like personalized or monogrammed glassware and drinkware that you would have seen on the Titanic for the White Star Line, right? And so now, if you go to Oga's Cantina in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland in California, and you order up some of their new Galactic Star Cruiser cocktails, you can get those Chandrila Starline logo glassware as your souvenir cup to take home from the bar. And I guess that's kind of cool. I was really hoping this was going to be an instance of Disney taking some of the furniture and the set dressings and installing them out there in California. I don't know, Nathan, what do you think? Oh, I've lost you. The translator is broken. There is
I fixed the translator. Sorry, there was a loud bang outside, so I'd muted myself. Anyways, I completely agree with you. When I saw the title of this article, I thought, oh, this is cool. They're repurposing assets. They're going to bring the chairs and the big balcony and, you know, incorporate that into their theme parks, which would be really cool. But yeah, I mean, it's still cool that they're bringing the glassware. It's a lot less cool.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, if you go to the cantina, you can order the Fiery Mustafarian as a cocktail, which, quote, has El Mayor Añejo Tequila, Aperol Aperitivo Liqueur, peach puree, peach syrup, and lime juice, served with a dropper of spicy lava syrup, because Mustafar got to have spicy lava. The Silver Sea Martini will have, quote, Hendrix Gin, Minute Maid Lemonade, ginger syrup, honey, and mint syrup, topped with a shimmery butterfly pea flower tea. That sounds disgusting, but I'm sure that somebody out there would enjoy the Silver Sea Martini. I would give the Fiery Mustafarian a try more so than I would anything that is shimmery butterfly pea flower tea.
I don't know what shimmery butterfly pea flower tea is, and I don't drink gin. I don't drink any alcohol, so all of these are right out for me unless they have a virgin version of them.
I'm sure you could get that. It looks like the only thing that would have to be left out of the fiery Mustafarian is the tequila.
The tequila. And they could have some sort of tequila substitute, I'm sure.
Yeah. But if you order the these drinks over at Oga's Cantina in California now, you'll get the Chandrillon Chalice. If you get the gin drink. If you get the spicy Mustafarian, fiery Mustafarian lava thing, you'll get it in a Chandrillon orb glass. And so you can take those home as your souvenir. Or if you don't want to keep up with the glass, you can always order it without the souvenir glass.
So my big question, you know, this is something that you take home with you. Obviously, it's something that you would have taken home with you if you had gone on the Star Cruiser. Do they have a limited supply of these and they're just trying to get rid of their extras? Or is this something that they are continuing to produce?
I think that the idea here is that they had some of them made up in inventory and now they're wanting to try to make a buck by getting rid of that inventory by offering it as a souvenir in California.
Which, you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't get one if I were there, but I'm not going to make the trip to California just to get a souvenir glass. So it's cool.
I think the first time that we do actually go to Galaxy's Edge, which I hope that we do someday soon, it's definitely going to be the one in Orlando because it's much easier to get to and it's bigger. Let's be honest. It's much bigger. It's a much bigger place than the one in California. I love California. Mita and I went to Disneyland on our honeymoon long before Disney owned Star Wars. So there was no Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, but there sure was a Star Tours ride, and we did do that while we were in California. And it was great, but it was basically the same ride as in Orlando. And once again, the campus for the ride, Star Tours, in California is a much smaller space, much smaller footprint than even Star Tours in Orlando. Like in Orlando, you've got the big to scale model the AT-AT Walker outside Star Tours, which is such a great throwback to remind you that this opened for Return of the Jedi, people. We talk about Star Tours and how cool they do updates, but that ride has not changed all that much, especially not the front face of it, since 1984 or something, or 86, I should say, which just blows my mind as a kid who went to Disney World in the 80s and rode that ride, and I was like, oh my god, it was amazing. And I'm happy to say that many, many years later, when I took Matthew for his first trip on Star Tours, he thought it was real. He was hanging on to the edge of the seat handles as we blasted off in the Star Tours vehicle and was all, ah! It was the greatest thing ever.
Yep. So, long story short, let's go to Orlando, not to California. I've only been to California once. It was a different part of California. It was a work trip. I had a work conference to go to. It was still fun, but I'm not going over there for a souvenir glass. I'll still rather go to Florida.
I actually expect now that they've decided to start selling these as souvenirs in California, they may end up on shopdisney.com or something like that very soon.
That seems very likely. You can just order them.
Yeah. No alcohol included, you know.
Yeah, which helps me as the person who doesn't drink alcohol.
And speaking of merchandise that you can get, let's talk about what Star Wars t-shirts we're wearing this week. I am rocking my Star Wars Celebration Chicago shirt because Nathan and I were lucky enough to go with our significant others to the 2019 Star Wars Celebration. The shirt has an awesome light side, dark side dichotomy thing going on with a big lightsaber running right down the center of the shirt, and on the right-hand side, you have the light side crew with a bunch of major light side characters, Amidala, Rey, Luke, etc. On the left-hand side, of course, you have the red-hued dark side force users with Palpatine, Dooku, which is as close as I can get to wearing an Asajj Ventress shirt today, and Darth Vader, and so on. Nathan, what do you got?
Well, Crosshairs asked Omega about being on Kashyyyk, and he's like, oh, you've been to Kashyyyk? So I am wearing a Beware of Wookiee. Gunji will come find you and hunt you down. And actually, Gunji's a really nice guy. He's not going to come hunt you down or anything. But you should be aware of Wookiees. They will rip your arms out if you show them bad Star Wars content.
Maybe Master Kinko, Kendo? Oh, dang it. What is the Top Knot Wookiee guy's name from the Acolyte trailer? Oh, this is going to drive me crazy. I got to go look it up real quick on StarWars.com. Yes, so StarWars.com, the data bank. He is Master Kelnaka. Oh, it's a modified Chewbacca. I gotta get that down. Yeah. Kelnaka. He may come and hunt you down, so beware of Wookiee, especially if said Wookiee is Master Kelnaka. But anyway, if you guys want your own cool What a Piece of Junk t-shirt or mouse pad or coffee mug, please go check out our store at tpublic.com. Search up Fandom Podcast Network in the search bar, and you'll see all kinds of cool merchandise, not only for What a Piece of Junk, but for all the other excellent Fandom Podcast Network shows out there. And speaking of searching for stuff on the internet, Nathan, where can people find us on the interwebs?
You can find us in plenty of different places on the interwebs. You can find us pretty much anywhere pods are cast. That includes Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and on YouTube. On the Podbean app, the master feed is fpnet.podbean.com. On Facebook, we're at What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. You can email Scott at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. I'm sure he would love to get an actual email instead of junk mail. On Twitter,
so much spam.
On Twitter, you might find us at What Wars. On Instagram, we're on Fandom Podcast Network. And if you do listen to us on any of these platforms, but particularly on Apple Podcasts, we would love for you to give us a review. Reviews help us know what we're doing well, what we could be doing better, what you want to hear, and it helps other people find our podcast. When we get those 5-star reviews, it helps these platforms promote our podcast to other people. So please like, subscribe, review, all of those great things. Plus, we don't have very high M counts, so people aren't searching for us that much. We really need the help getting the word out there.
Yeah, we don't want to upset the Wookiee, whether it be Gungi or Master Kelnaka, because, you know, they'll rip our arms out of our sockets. So we got to pay the bills to keep the Drunken Gungan running here, people. So please give us a 5-star review, or at the very least, a review of some kind. It doesn't have to be 5 stars. Anyway, we want to thank you guys for joining us for this slightly abbreviated episode. Hopefully we'll have Derek back with us soon as we head on into the back half of the final season of Star Wars The Bad Batch. So please hit us up on social media. Tell us what you like, what you didn't like. We love interacting with our fans because you guys are the reason that we do this. And until next time, please always remember to respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, punch it.